Welcome to the Modern Enterprise Podcast. This is a podcast tailored for enterprise IT leaders and decision makers wanting to transform their organization into a more modern and agile enterprise where software drives the innovation. This podcast is hosted by Krish Subramanian, founder and chief research analyst of Risha.Research, a research firm focused on modern IT stacks and artificial intelligence. In this podcast, we will talk about the trends reshaping the IT landscape that falls in line with the modern enterprise framework, advocated by Risha.Research. For more information on our research, please visit www.risha.com. You can read our research articles at www.stacksense.io. We are reinventing industry research for the data-driven world by opening up our data and research process through GitHub. We encourage you to join us in our research by starting our repos or doing a pull request whenever appropriate. This will get your voices heard in our research process. You can find out repos at www.github.com/stacksense.io. You can also watch our videos and webinar recordings at www.risha.tv. Please subscribe to this podcast at anchor.fm/modern enterprise. Let us now move on to today's show.
In this episode of Modern Enterprise Podcast, I'm talking to Eric from OverOps. Eric, can you introduce yourself and talk about your company?
Certainly, yeah. My name is Eric Meisel. I'm a VP of Solution Engineering at OverOps. And OverOps is a new technology to help prevent rapid code changes from impacting customers. So the idea, we're coining this idea of continuous reliability, which is helping customers bring together automated code quality gates, contextual feedback loops to developers, and observability in your CI/CD pipelines. So this notion of code monitoring code and giving you direct feedback and to your developers and really giving us a better chance at putting more reliable code in production and in a faster fashion.
In today's episode, we are going to be talking about continuous reliability in the deployment of code. But before we do that, let's set some context. Agile became the primary way of developing applications in the enterprise. But soon, developers realized that traditional IT structure didn't allow them to deploy the applications fast enough. So DevOps became the path towards removing any friction and making it seamless for developers to deploy applications in the cloud. Eric, where do you see this evolution? And you talk to so many enterprises. What do you see in the market? Are enterprises using DevOps as the way to go?
So, of course, you know, everyone wants to move faster, right? I mean, that's the end game. I want to move faster. I need less human intervention. I need repeatability and the ability to get things done, right? And so this evolution, you know, CI became very popular because we're all doing stuff manually and I need to build a pipeline that was repeatable. So it's starting to evolve even faster now that we want developers to move faster. They check in code. It's automatically starting build. And of course, what made this super powerful and possible was the cloud, right? No longer am I waiting on QA to open up the QA servers to test my code. It's just, boom, it kicks off, it builds it up, it runs all its tests, tears it back down. And you can move so much faster. You have 20 test runs running simultaneously, testing everybody's code changes, and then they can all merge together in an automated fashion. I think that was the evolution of CI, and it's really become the forefront for so many customers to move from 6-month release cycles down to 1 month or even weekly, sometimes daily for some more advanced customers. Now CD is really picking up quickly. So before, artifacts were dropped in an artifactory, and then they sort of hit this manual deploy model. People want that to be automated, right? I want to be able to start doing more canary blue green deploys in automated fashion. And so instead of deploying manually and then, oh, hope it works, and then you don't have a rollback capability, now I want to build a rollback and I want things to be faster. So then CD is becoming the next wave, and it's just continuous from CI, right? It's dropped into Artifactory, it's deployed, and then I can start, you know, moving a percentage of customers onto it and then detecting should I roll back or not. And with this notion of continuous validation and verification. So again, if you notice, what's kind of getting eliminated is as much human factor as possible. So it's more autonomous, right? It's happening, it's repeatable. And so I think you're going to see more and more of that, to the point where I could check in code from my desk in the morning, grab a cup of coffee, it's deployed 20 minutes later, which is pretty important.
Automation is the underlying foundation for deploying applications to productions fast. There is no doubt about it, and developers today want to deploy multiple times to productions every day. Having said that, automation definitely helps deploy code faster to production. But what is critical is deploying good code to production fast. How can automation help deploy good code to production fast? We need to continuously ensure that not just any bit is going to production, but bit that are good and that matters, that is going to production. How can organizations use automation to ensure that the code that is going into production is good code and it goes without any friction? Can you talk about it?
Sure. So that's a challenge, right? So there are certain things that there's almost like these are musts. I need to have some sort of static code analysis. I think we all know cut and paste is 90% of the code that shows up in our apps, and not all of what we find on the web is actually gold. And so you need to have those gates, and those gates do stop a build, but they give you feedback quickly. And that's, to me, I need the feedback. The feedback faster makes me move faster, right? So I start putting in the static gates. I put in security gates because a lot of the libraries I grab from the web may have vulnerabilities. I need to scan for those. That can stop. But those are critical. I have to stop. What was sort of missing, which is now what OverOps offers, is this dynamic code quality gate, which then as you're testing your code, it's checking for known and unknown issues. Because, you know, when we all test, we tend to test what we know, but we don't know what we don't know. And so OverOps is helping us with those things. And then it gives us a gate. Now, again, the gate can stop a build, but it gives us direct feedback and I can move faster. So developers can open it up. They get context. They fix the issues. They actually move faster. So if I could replay what I used to write software for a living, I would check it in. We would do a build. And then we had manual testers and they would write up a Jira ticket. And it could take us a day or two to unwind just to figure out what they did to write, recreate it with automatic code quality gates. I get context that shows me the exact code and the variables and the data that I need to solve it. So I can theoretically move much, much faster and spend less time trying to guess what happened than I actually know. So if I kind of play that forward, everything's happening automatically. I check in code, static, security, dynamic happens while I test. I know if the code is good or not objectively, right? Like it's clear. I have clear gates, clear rules. And it notifies me right away. I can make the change and check in the code and I move. We are seeing people move faster and faster with that model every day.
Yes, just sending applications to production fast doesn't make sense. You need to send good code to production fast. I absolutely agree there. Now, I want to talk about the unknown problems that creep in. See, if it is a known problem which is available through the industry bodies or through best practices that are followed by organizations, we can solve it with a bunch of rules and there are some ways to tackle these problems effectively. What is it with the unknown problems? How can organizations tackle that? For example, in the recent unfortunate accident of Southwest Airlines, the problem that brought down the plane was an unknown problem that came due to what we call as grave failures. How can organizations tackle these unknown problems as they take code from developer laptop all the way to production? How is OverOps helping organizations tackle these unknown problems for which there is no proper documentation, there are no established best practices? How can that be handled in an effective way as code travels across the DevOps pipeline?
Perfect. So I'll preface it by saying it doesn't know everything, right? So let's be clear. So as we exercise the code, what ends up happening is there are errors under the covers that a lot of things don't surface. And OverOps captures 100% of those, and it actually uniquely fingerprints and can tell you if things are new or critical as defined by you. So for me, no pointer exception, index out of bounds, things that are critical types of errors that happen in software, I don't want those. And I can detect all of those, whether or not it's in a log or in my testing tool catches it OverOps will catch all of those. Now, the crux of it is it comes down to how much code we exercise, right? So there are situations where if the code wasn't exercised, of course, nobody's going to know about it, and you're still going to have the Southwest issue. So it's not a perfect world. But if you think of the cycle of life, I put in the best that I can for known. OverOps may find a few issues within the known. You build test cases for those. And then as you have stuff in production, you build test cases for those. And OverOps is actually helping customers build those test cases because we provide the data and the framework to do it. And you think of that iteration and that cycle, we're going to get better code coverage with tests that actually were things that were broken that are now fixed. We make sure they don't happen again. And then any other unknowns are going to be uncovered, right? Because OverOps is constantly listening. It's not a person looking. No one's looking at the logs. It's actually looking at the running application by doing this dynamically at runtime. So it's finding all those interesting things.
In the name of ensuring continuous reliability, we cannot ask organizations to tear down their existing tools, processes, workflows, etc. How can we ensure continuous reliability, let's say with a platform like OverOps, without tearing down the existing tools and workflows? How can we seamlessly blend into the existing tools and workflows and at the same time ensure continuous reliability as the code goes from developer laptop to production? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, we can. So what's interesting is, as you hit the nail on the head, I've been at OverOps for 2.5 years, and clearly nobody wants a new tool, right? And change is always tough, right? What we quickly realized working with our customers is everyone has a standard pipeline tool, their standard ticketing tool, standard alerting tools, right? These are industry standards. We're all using them. And so I don't care if you're using Jenkins, Bamboo, TeamCity, GitLab CI, whatever. OverOps has built plugins for all of these. So as a post-build step, you can make a call to get a quality report, and it'll show up right in your build pipeline tool, which is awesome. It'll stop a build, give you a list of everything that's broken and links to how to fix them. Same thing, we'll auto-create tickets. We'll auto-give you alerts in your favorite chat apps tool or your enterprise tools. We also do this integrated troubleshooting, which I absolutely love, which is if I'm any logging framework, even if it's just the app logs, OverOps will inject what we call a tiny link. It's just a small hyperlink back to the OverOps root cause screen in the log file. So if you have an error and you write it to a log, there's a link. Same thing with APMs. We actually surface our links there. So if you can envision as a developer, I can get a Jira ticket. I can get a Slack message. I can get, I come in the morning, I work the Sonar Cube report, and guess what? OverOps state is there. So it's super easy for a developer. And if I shift over to the operations side and there's an issue and I'm using one of the popular APM tools and I click on the error and there's a link and it takes me to OverOps. So we really are very focused on being a part of this supply chain, these DevOps tools, making it easy to consume the data. You don't have to go look for it. So widely successful for all of our customers.
Let's go back to a topic we talked earlier, that is security. Getting developers to embrace a security model and bake it into the code from their laptop all the way to production is not an easy thing to do. I would like to know how OverOps is ensuring code security, and also DevSecOps is gaining a lot of traction. Is OverOps supporting some of the DevSecOps concepts? Is it ensuring that the developer environment is safe and the code follows all the security protocols and data is encrypted at rest and the data is encrypted in transmission? Does it ensure all these things and make sure that the code that is deployed to the production is secure code? Is OverOps doing that, or what are your thoughts on how we can ensure this kind of a security and bake it into the process?
So I'll give you a couple paths here. So the first thing is the nice part about OverOps is there's no code changes. You don't have to worry about introducing new code into your application. OverOps is agent technology, so there's no code. We are not today a DevOps sec tool, so we're not looking for vulnerabilities, but I can tell you we've actually helped some customers solve some security problems just inadvertently because of how we surface data and how we surface exceptions people didn't know about. So So those are good things. So when we capture an event, we take what we call a snapshot. That snapshot consists of source code and variables. We redact any PII data. So we have a ton of rules in place that you can redact. Everything's encrypted in transfer. So there's none of the data that OverOps captures is ever surfaced unless you have a key and privileges to get it. So we keep all that safe. So that's sort of our space. What's interesting, if I may, I typically wouldn't say this, but we do have interesting roadmap on being able to help customers detect if they're writing PII data to logs, or if they're surfacing PII data where they don't want to. We haven't built it yet, but it's something that we have on our roadmap for next year, which I think is interesting. We have several customers asking us, because we, I don't know if you remember, Twitter a couple years ago said, hey, we were writing passwords to logs, clear text, and nobody knew. You know, so you can envision as a developer, you have the word password as a string, and then you pass it to another variable, and it becomes value, string value, and then nobody knows what it is anymore. And then you write to a log, and then, so if we could stop that and help customers, I think it's something that we genuinely want to look into. But today we don't have it, so let's be clear.
Okay. Let's go back to the topic of unknown unknowns. If it is known problems, we can use some rules-based engine to sort of handle all the problems. With the unknown unknowns, can we use machine learning or deep learning to sort of figure out potential problems before they come and hit us? Do you think that's doable?
Sure. So I'll first touch on, you know, OverOps, we're short of AI, right? So the idea is we can detect everything and we classify and categorize your errors. So, you know, we could tell you if something's new, which is pretty interesting. It's pretty hard to know if something's new. OverOps does know because we index your code at the bytecode level and we can tell you equivocally something's new or it's resurfaced. And then we categorize them by types of exceptions and stuff. So we know what's interesting. So that's always very useful in the now, right? That's the being proactive. I think where you're going is more where we're trying to look at a conglomerate of data. So I want to take log data, APM data, all these different data, network data, and then start doing some machine learning and potentially AI on it to try to predict. I think some people are trying to get there, right? So this predictive nature of we see these trends, and it leads to this outcome, right? And I see some companies trying to do it. I think it's super interesting. Those are for very hard outlier type problems to solve. And that there's definitely a need for it. The biggest challenge I think is as data centers shift and change, right? Because you can imagine that before it used to be a fixed set of servers and I had 4 JVMs or 4 .NET servers or whatever it was. Now it's, I've got 40 today, it bursts to 100 tomorrow, I've software-defined networks, I have a new VLAN over here, it's changing ever rapidly. And so I think that puts a little bit of stress on the process. But there to me, there's clearly a need for some of these very, very hard problems to solve that happen, you know, once a day, once a week, but they're big, right? They're big. How do I figure it out is always going to be a challenge. I do think, you know, OverOps adds a nice piece to it because we'll see stuff that nobody sees and to surface it. But the things you're talking about take another level. Again, we don't play in that space, but I think there's definitely a need for that type of work.
Let me wear the hat of an enterprise decision maker. I definitely want my organization to be agile and I want the code to go fast to production. But I also want to use a platform like OverOps to ensure that good code goes to production fast. So I want to implement continuous reliability in my organization. What kind of an ROI am I looking at? What is the performance gain I'm getting by implementing something like OverOps? Am I saving money? Am I saving time? What is that ROI I'm looking at when I bring in a platform like OverOps into my existing tools and workflow?
Certainly. So what we're seeing with our customers is about a 10 to 12% gain in developer productivity, which is super interesting because most developers, it's usually your top senior folks who are debugging the hard problems and they're spending 40 to 60% of their time doing that. And we're giving you that time back. And so making developers go faster is powerful. Innovation is king, right? And so if I can give 10% developer productivity, that's a huge win. Especially in today's landscape of trying to find good devs is hard. The other side of the coin is, and this for a lot of people, when you're troubleshooting problems in production, we tend to land on a stack trace, right? And the stack trace is a log, and I spend time sifting through logs and doing experimental fixes and the like. Over ops root cause screen showing you source code and variable state, we are solving problems and saving 90 to 95% of the time. So our customers' MTTI, MTTR is reduced by 90%. That's a massive number. And so, you know, problems that were taking days and weeks are taking hours and minutes. And that's huge. So those are the two key ROIs, developer productivity and reduction of MTTI, MTTR.
Awesome. 90% reduction in MTTR is something that's really awesome. And that is a good enough reason for me as an enterprise decision maker to invest in a tool like CoverOps. Okay, as we are coming closer to the end of the podcast, I want to ask a question which I usually ask all my guests, that is to make predictions about the future. But I'm going to add a twist for you. In 5 years from now, I'm sure we may still not be in a situation where code writes code, but will we be in a situation where the insights that we get from machine learning or deep learning drives the automation and code goes from developer laptop to production in an autonomous way, without any human intervention or without any manual automation being set up? Can we achieve that kind of continuous reliability nirvana in 5 years from now?
Oh, absolutely. I think the more automation, the better. I do a whole talk on CR, continuous reliability, and one of them is to eliminate as much human intervention as possible and get to as much automation as possible. So, you know, if I can put my crystal ball in front of me, you know, developer writes a piece of code. It is, from that point he commits it, everything is automated. From all of the checks, you get direct feedback for any issues you have. It gets deployed automatically. You have continuous validation, verification, and testing going on in production as it's happening. What's interesting is I have a lot of customers asking me now that when we find an error, can we actually do a pull request? So can you envision that an error is found? Whether, you know, the static tools give you some of this. So in the dynamic world, if an error is found, tools like OverOps can say, hey, automated, here's your test case so you don't have it happen again. And here's a pull request to fix the code. Someone has to manually look at it and go, yes, no, commit it. You start to see that happen. You're starting to see things move at tremendous speed. What's funny is, I'll just take a 2 second digression. I went to Amsterdam to the NVIDIA conference a few years ago. I had a speaking spark there, and the CEO of NVIDIA said, we're going to get to the point where code writes code, which I thought was hilarious. And one of the CEOs from one of the major car manufacturers said, excuse me, code writing code? He says, what are the rest of us going to do? He said, play video games, which I thought was hilarious, right? But I think you're starting to see a lot of this stuff happen. So we have machine learning, we're learning, things are happening more automated. Now, obviously, we all have to have jobs. We don't want to eliminate ourselves. But I think a lot of the remedial things will be more automated and faster. And you're going to get to the point where hopefully we're not testing in production anymore.
I totally agree. We don't have to take ourselves from the picture completely, but we can move human beings from doing the nitty-gritty work which leads to inefficiencies and even errors to a more supervisory role, while the insights and automation can take care of the hard job of ensuring the flow. I think that future is realistic, and we may be in the future 5 years from now, as humans will become more of a supervisor than the ones who are doing the hard job of moving the bits along the pipeline. So that is definitely something which I foresee happening. Thanks, Eric, for your time. It was a great conversation. In fact, one of my concerns in the industry is there is too much focus on agile, that is taking the code from developer laptop to production fast. But there is very little conversation about taking good code from developer laptop to production fast. Today, we could have that conversation with you. And this is a great conversation. And thanks for your time.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.